NBA basketball fans and some college basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Banter Podcast / College Ball Show. We are back to talk some basketball. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and like I said, we're here to discuss a variety of things. We will kind of briefly update you on Adam Silver and his conversation, his live stream. Who is he battling? I'm just kidding. He had a stream where, you know, he talked about a variety of things to the players union and to a bunch of people on the line. Some of it was just giving us some information on, you know, how much money and revenue they'll lose without, you know, fans wanting to stick to a 7-game series. Some other stuff in general when it comes to that. We'll also, of course, talk about the Last Dance documentary about MJ in the Bulls in general, not just 98 Bulls, but 7 and 8 episode. We'll recap those. I do have some audio. I have some Ahmad Rashad audio as well, which would be fun. A conversation with Bird, MJ, Magic, Ewing, and Barkley, I think it was. It's pretty funny. And so we'll touch upon that. Also, we're going to talk 96 Bulls. We didn't do it last week. We forgot. We got a little caught up, and I was complaining about Isaiah Thomas too long. I don't know what it was. But 96 Bulls versus 2017 Golden State Warriors. I'm going to give that to my co-host and see what he thinks about it, because he's a big Golden State fan. And obviously that 17-18 roster was pretty damn impressive, no doubt about it. In fact, I remember back then talking about it the year before, and when they added Durant, I thought, okay, now we can really start talking about, comparing them in general. So we'll talk about that. As far as NCAA, Betsy DeVos came out with there's a new Title 11 federal regulation rule that really throws you for a loop. It just throws you for a loop. We'll also talk about the one-time transfer rule that they're kicking around right now. There's an interesting article that has some the potential effect on what it could come from that. And so, yeah, we'll kind of wrap it up with that. So we'll start NBA as far as actual NBA updates, go to the Last Dance, NCAA, yada, yada, yada. So first and foremost, I do want to bring in Marshall and see how he's doing on this fine spring-ish summer day.
Life is not bad, brother. Did you mention our Grueling Truth connection along with ways people can listen to us?
And I'm glad that you said that. Go ahead, though. You're doing okay, though, otherwise?
I'm doing good. I put in some effort today. I got a little workout in. Thankfully, had a good friend I can rely on, and I got a new couch. For the past 7 years, I've had 2 sets of double recliners, but my basketball coach, I always speak highly of on here, pretty much like a sister to me, texted me a couple weeks ago, like, hey, you want any furniture? You know, because she knows I'm a single guy, whatever. And it was right. This really nice couch. And I was like, you know what? I miss laying down on couches, taking naps, because with the recliners and the council, I could never do that. So I was like, yeah. So sent the guy $200 this morning, got a U-Haul. I use a little bit of muscle. And the funniest part is, Chris, so we broke down my couch and took the 2 head cover, basically the 2 like head parts off, and then took the whole like bottom of it to the dumpster or outside right. My apartment. And we went to get a U-Haul truck, and we're back to swap cars about 30, 40 minutes later from my apartment, and the couch was gone.
So, nice.
Apparently today I made someone's day. Now they don't have any bolts. They'd have to buy bolts, but someone was gifted a very free, nice couch in good condition out of the kindness of my heart, I guess. I might have to use that as a charity write-off for my taxes next year. But yeah, life's okay. We went to see a friend, had a drink, and now I'm doing the podcast, and I'm relaxed on the new couch. So life's okay, my friend.
And I can attest That was the best $200 that you spent in your life, because the amount of sleep that you're going to get on a couch. And I know this because I had two separate couches that you definitely like. And we'd be watching this big game or these big fights. And then minutes later after they were done, it'd be like, Marshall. It's gone. Out. He could drink Mountain Dew. And 40 minutes later, out on the couch for good, dude. That's so funny that you brought that up.
Amen. Amen, sir.
I'm not lying with that, am I?
No. If I could literally, I would pay $500 right now to get that couch that you used to have and ship it to Texas. I mean, that thing was the best couch I've ever had. This thing's good, but that was Mecca for me. That couch was, oh, that was heaven. I don't know why. The second I put my head down, even if it was a fourth quarter double overtime game,
right,
in 3 minutes I was out.
Seriously, and I finally just moving into my new place this last fall, I actually finally got rid of that couch.
Man, it was rest
it,
in
it
peace.
Had you though. It had you though. It was done. It was done. It had seen its best days, that's for sure. But that's funny that you bring that up. And also, he did bring up the NBA banter / college ball show, because we're not in the NBA all the way yet. But if you want to find this show, you can find it at right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It streams live at archives under that Ropeadope Radio podcast banter. But you know what? You don't actually have to – I was going to say banner – but you don't have to find it just on Blog Talk. Some people listen to it on the browser. Some people download it right there. That's cool. But if not, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, really across the board. We're also part of the GruelingTruth.com Sports Podcast Network. That's basketball, football, baseball, boxing, everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there at the GruelingTruth.com. Well, betnow.eu with promo code TGT. That's gruelingtruth.com. And you can find them everywhere, you know, everywhere that the podcast network, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or tune in to find the programs, find the platforms. And one more thing real quick. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have, you're not quite satisfied. Everybody has been archiving all sorts of stuff lately. That's for sure. I know I have. I got something for you. I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial. Even when you sign up, the plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They do have the cloud DVR. It's called AT&T TV Now. That's live streaming cable. But if you're in an area of the country that it's just bad. It's just the internet is just very mediocre. It's one thing to go to Netflix or Amazon and stream an archive show. It's another thing to have a live broadcast, which is what AT&T TV Now is. There is AT&T TV. That's your normal cable platform. That's a growing platform as well. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's in New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, California, all the way up to the Northwest with Seattle. Other places like Seattle or St. Louis and in Wichita, Topeka, other places in the Midwest. Basically, just Google it, AT&T TV, put your area code in there, and see if it's in your area. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, live streaming cable. Okay, thanks for that reminder, too. I'm just so excited to talk about this basketball stuff. So Adam Silver got on the line the other day. On Friday, we talked about this last week that they were going to have, you know, a big meeting, basically a call with the NBA PA and the NBA, a variety of other people. And some of the stuff they talked about how, you know, they're if it does the 2019-2020 season, the one they were currently in, resume, no fans are expected, no surprise there. And that could be the case until the vaccine's there. That's what he kind of made known, which isn't a shocker, but that's pretty long term if you think about it. Here's another one, and I thought it was more in the 30 range 40% of the league's revenue comes from the fans. Now, I don't believe that's just, you know, buying a ticket. I think that's part of it, but it's also buying, you know, buying stuff, jerseys and stuff you buy in the arena as well. So another thing he mentioned was the decision. You can go until June. It's not like at the end of May he's got to make this decision to keep going. He said that, you know, that one or two locations would probably be the best. You know, how we mentioned Walt Disney World in Orlando and Las Vegas. You know, just so you wouldn't be flying around, that makes a whole lot of stuff. The NBA is sifting through a lot of bad options, meaning whatever route the reception could take. It's not going to be ideal. Obviously, this whole thing's not ideal, but it is what it is. The NBA is projecting a one-year timetable on the vaccine. So he's still not sure about, you know, how that works. And he admitted that right now the NBA couldn't even start if it wanted to, which makes a lot of sense. The NBA teams will be told again it is voluntary for players to work out. They have no pressure to come in or nothing like that. Silver admitted there would be a significant impact for the league's financial if there's no season and then no fans attending games in 2021, which obviously it would, you know, be a big thing. He would look into other interactive ways to get the fans engaged. The NBA like leads all sports when it comes to that already, so they shouldn't have that big of a problem. Talking about Christmas Day might be, you know, December 25th is when they, you know, start the next season, the 2021. So there's like a 3 to 6 week ramp up, you know, to get the season going. He wasn't, you know, tying himself into, hey, this is how we're going to do it. He did mention how he would like to do, to stick with the 7 games, but it could be a play-in tournament to get you there. All signs that this thing is probably going to happen in July at some point. If you look at the MLB, they're, you know, professional baseball, they're trying to start July 4th. They're trying to get plans for that. Overall, the light is getting brighter at the end of the tunnel, my friend.
Yeah, and I'm just happy, and this will go slightly political, but I'm happy that he's speaking to people positively. He's handling this professionally, giving the best advice he can, not offering false hope. He also said that the NBA would need around 15,000 tests to make this happen, but he's not going to take tests from people who may need it due to more medical severity. I mean, compared today to our leader who storms off because he was being questioned by female reporters who didn't want to speak to. Like, there's different ways to handle an organization. And obviously, Adam Silver and the president are completely different people. But it's nice to have a little sense of, hey, like, we have a plan. And we've talked about this forever. And hell, I think if our government had a plan in general, that a lot of these things would be moving forward, Chris. But at least for the sake of basketball in this conversation, he's being optimistic. And there's a sense of, you know, Silver knows what's going on. He's not going to risk things, you know. And he even said, you know, we need to risk people come back at some point, but to what extent? So I take away from it. Again, we're still a ways away, but there's some sense of, hey, let's have basketball. And here's how it's going to happen. And I remember hearing this point from a couple of like NBA ESPN people, like right away when this happened. And the quote has always been from Silver's, hey, we need to finish the season. You know, I still think in some way, shape or form that your season loses some sense of, and I'm not even sure if credibility is the word, because in all honesty, Adam Silver, no one ever saw this happening. But maybe it's just for the moments of history where even Silver, being selfish as a man to himself, says, guys, I don't want to be the commissioner that has that season where LeBron and the Lakers and the Clippers should have faced off and we only played 64 games this year. You know, I think there's a little bit of pride, that self-pride himself, Chris, of, hey, like, I need to make this happen for the fans, for myself, for the history of the sport, for whatever. And I think that's the approach he's continuing to give. Because there are people that would probably be content, Chris, with just saying, hey, let's just wrap this year up and, like, let's move on. So come fall, we can be good to go. We'll be more than happy with people being tested, that we'll have a regular off season. We can fit in the draft. So I am happy Chris is staying optimistic and doing what he can. And I do think that in the next month or so, we will have a better feeling for how things are doing medically. I hope that we have more tests. Realistically, I don't think 15,000 tests needed is an insane number. I think that's actually probably pretty mild. And he could probably find a company or organization to simply make him those masks. So, yes, I'm with you. I would say from a 1 to 10 meter on will we see NBA playoffs this year, I would say about 7 or 8. I personally don't think it's necessary to go 7 games because let's say we do need the 3-week period to come back. Let's say they do come back around July. If you need a 2 to 3 week warm-up period, okay, now we're looking at August. And if we do 7-game series, now we're looking at, you know, finishing this damn thing in September. You know, I'd be fine with best out of threes and best out of fives, you know, whatever. But anyways, I'm with you. 78% optimistic that we'll be seeing playoff basketball. And that's a good takeaway, especially for sport fans like us who have been subjected to lawnmower racing and marble racing on ESPN2. I'm very excited to watch LeBron and Kawhi and Antetokounmpo and the Miami Heat, you know, play some playoff basketball, even if it is 45 to 65 days from now, my friend.
Yeah, and I think some of that ramp up would happen in June, and so they could actually start in July. If they could start in July, we kind of went over the mid to late April date is when they start. And then May and June. So we went over that a couple of weeks ago with that Las Vegas. And if you haven't listened to the episode, we break down just how this really could work out in Las Vegas, no doubt about it. You can go check it out. It's a couple of weeks ago. But you know, I think they could do 7 games if they started in June or July, just based off it's a 2-month stretch. So they could definitely get it done. But like you said, if they can't get going until July, as far as everybody in their facilities and having that 3 to 4 to 6 maybe week ramp up, then yeah, we'll see on that. I don't really care in the end, though. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, kick rocks over this. You know what I mean? It'd be just nice to
I think the only one point I would make to that to push it more is I would rather have a 3 to 4 week like training period. Let's say, hey, for the month of the middle June. Mid-June to mid-July, all we're doing is letting the guys practice. Maybe play, like, you know, essentially, like, exhibition games. And I'd rather have a higher-end product of 5 to 3-game series than have maybe a shortened time frame of rep time and best out of 7 and then have the water be diluted. You know, because as good as these players are, Chris, as we talked about also a couple weeks ago, some of these guys got to be out of shape. You know, I mean, when we get spoiled from the NBA to watch these top 150 guys in the world play basketball. But I mean, half of those guys had to have been, you know, doing family stuff, maybe, you know, maybe having some minor health issues, you know, whatever the case is. It'd be nice to put in the extra time needed to warm up. So we're seeing, you know, something that truly reflects normally how good NBA basketball is.
Yeah, 100%. We're sitting, you know, on May 11th talking about this. So in a month, they could be in those facilities already starting to get going. So yeah, that's a good point. That is a very good point. Now, the only thing that helps is they did go through a full season, so their bodies were in a crazy shape. So you never know. That time off, if they could get in game shape, could actually give us a great playoffs because their body's fresh, although it's not out of shape. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's a good point. I'd much rather it be just the best product it can be, rather than pushing it or making it about, you know, the amount of greed that's out there. There's also, just to kind of wrap some of this up, they did say that some of the teams were allowed to test for asthmatic players and staff for the coronavirus, you know, which makes a lot of sense. They said the Orlando Magic, the Clippers, and the Lakers are also among the teams expected. I think the Timberwolves are too, to allow to conduct coronavirus tests to all the players and staff members entering or, you know, individual workouts or whatever. But also to the MLB joined. They actually got some stats out of their league as far as who has it right now. And it was a way certain hospitals are doing these tests on whether it's companies or whatever. And obviously I'm assuming the MLB paid for this, but some of these will be involved in this type of testing too. And it gives them a better feel, like the Mayo Clinic antibody study. So you're basically going to go in there and see how many people had it. So you're not taking the coronavirus test per se. It's the test to see if you've already had it. That's obviously what we need in our general public too. That would help a lot, based off that. So, we'll take what we can get. We're not going to sit here and get too damn, worried about this stuff. That's for sure. But is there any last words that you'd want to talk about with, sure, when it comes to this?
Let me just ask you one question, and this wasn't prepped, just kind of off the top of my head for you. I complimented Silver, and I don't think there is a huge thing, but do you think he's done anything where people could rip on him for, or do you think, like me, he's done a pretty good job? Because at the start of this, to give the example, when those Brooklyn Net players did get tested, the NBA took just a little bit of heat, but would you say overall that Silver's done a pretty good job of leading a multi-million dollar organization in a time that's really tough? Because I got to applaud the guy. Like, I know when we did our NFL show a couple weeks ago with your fellow co-host, we were kind of like, man, Goodell just didn't quite have that spirit to help people during this time, because it's maybe not quite so him. Anything right. Silver's done that you're like, huh, I got to applaud the guy, Chris. I think he's handled himself pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, the fact that when he canceled the season, it became a problem that everybody started, or not everybody, but most people started really paying attention to. I mean, if we're honest, that's what did it. The lockdown in Italy, that Saturday and Monday officially, before that week, I think it was Wednesday when they shut down, Wednesday or Thursday. That was shit. That's crazy. But that was 2 months ago already. That did it right there. And, you're right. They did take some heat. Also, even that night when everybody got tested, thing is, what people don't realize is they were told they couldn't leave the facility before everybody got tested. So it was actually had to do with Oklahoma City. It had to do with the people that were the government, whoever it was that stepped in. But they made them take the test. And it wasn't just the players either. So I thought that was a little in between. But, yeah, I do. I think he's done a really good job. I like how, first of all, they closed this shit down, which the NCAA wasn't even going to do until that stepped in. Until the individual league shut down their own conference tournament, as we found out. And that made them – because, remember, they made that rule. It's cool. We'll just keep playing. No fans. They were already ready to do that, and we obviously know why, because of the money. But – yeah, I think he's done a good job. I like how he's putting it out there. He's saying stuff that everybody is wondering about. He's answering those questions, and then he's giving you plenty of detail behind it. He's saying, hey, we got it probably a year before we're going to get the vaccine. So why not, we got to worry about next year too. So I do think he's done a really good job. The NBA in general for quite some time has done a good job in a variety of ways. There's obviously going to be stuff that you disagree about or whatever, but yeah, I think he's done a good job. Definitely. Definitely. Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about episode 7 and episode 8 of The Last Dance. Now, obviously this had to do with MJ leaving the basketball, which was pretty shocking back then, talking about after the three-peat and his father dying. And there was the gambling conspiracy we'll touch upon. There's a variety of stuff, but I forgot to play this last week, but I got to do it again. Or I got to do it this week, not again, but I can't forget. I understand Jerry Krause put a hell of a team around Michael Jordan. That is the key word, Michael Jordan. But yeah, that helps. And you saw when he left, he wasn't, they weren't as good. But as far as rebuilding, I mean, I didn't think they'd be good in 99 or whatever. But here's him talking about the team and it just won, you know, back-to-back championships and all that. This is what he was saying earlier in the process. And this is where it just – he's still focused on him and what he's doing. And it's just still unbelievable. But listen to this. It's just crazy.
The one thing I would say, and I'd say it from Jerry Rice up on down, this is a great organization. This organization is special. From Jerry, it starts with Jerry, and it goes down all the way to Joe Lee, our clubhouse guy who's been here 25 years. It's an organization thing, and that's what it's all about. The team is a great team, but the organization is one of the all-time great, if not the greatest organization ever, one of the all-time great organization thing. And
I had to pause it again because he said the team is the team. I mean, it's just a fucking – they're just out there winning the championships. Listen to this.
That's what it's all about. The team is a great team, but the organization is one of the all-time great, if not the greatest organization ever. That's what I'm so much proud of.
That's what he's so proud of. That's the number one thing that he mentions after them, you know, getting a repeat. I mean, come on, dude. And plus, when you say it's the best franchise ever, slow your roll, dude. First of all, the Minneapolis Lakers were the first dynasty, just so you know. Yeah, it's called Lakers. There's not there's a bunch of man-made lakes in California, but we all know where the lakes are. Okay, that's Midwest and, of course, Minnesota. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding. But to sit there and say that about – it's still just – I can't believe he's saying that. I mean, the team's nice, you know. It's good and all, but it's really the organization that's doing it. When you hear something like that, it's like, dude, are you really stuck on this shit?
Like I said, when we first started breaking this whole thing down, I'm 35, so I was kind of just enjoying to start to watch basketball like the mid 90s with, like, I remember the Knicks and the Heat and the Pacers, and obviously Jordan too in the finals. But you know, in the first episode of this, you know, I did not recall that there was the Scottie Pippen paycheck issues or that Krause had said, hey, Phil Jackson, by the way, you're done after this year. I don't care what happens. The team can go 82-0 and you're still not going to be our coach next year. You know, so this dude really just, obviously there was egos, there were button heads. He really just didn't enjoy this as much as he possibly could have. I mean, again, what if Bob Myers tells Steve Kerr, you know, a couple of years ago, dude, I'm happy with what we've been doing.
Nice little run.
Steph and Dre don't like you, or I don't want to pay Klay Thompson. So this is your last year here. Good luck this year. Again, the social media outbreak, I mean, they'd probably want Bob Myers to be fired. Steve Kerr would be like, well, what the fuck is going on? And the players would be like, okay, you know. And again, this situation is involving two of the best players of all time, probably the best, number one, and then maybe the best rebounder of all time, one of the best coaches of all time. So it'd be one thing if you were the fucking Charlotte Bobcats.
Right.
When you're winning 15 games a year, like, you know what? Kemba Walker's not going to take us to the promised land, coach. You're done after this year. Sorry. One more year in Charlotte, then we have to move on, change directions. Okay. You've been winning 15, 18 games a year, and and Kemba Walker is not MJ or LeBron, you know?
Right.
Again, it must have been that sense of, my God, the media loves Michael so much. I don't want people to forget about me, you know? And again, this is your friend.
Absolutely.
He,
yeah, of course.
He picked the people, you know, he did. But, and again, to go back to the Warriors a little bit here, I've never heard Bob Myers say, man, you know what, Steve Kerr, you guys were lucky to have me as your GM. He's, you know, and if you wanted
nice.
To.
The team's nice, but it's
like, you know, Steph and Clay, they're pretty good, but. Look at me and my owners.
But
like,
really,
we run the Bay City. Like, you know, they should be thankful for us. No, that's not how things work. So, it must have killed him to have such a man of a GOAT aura around him in Jordan. And just, he didn't quite get the praise. But again, if you're the GM, I mean, honestly, Chris, it would be super hard for me if we were to do a podcast tomorrow and you want me to name five GMs in the NBA. I could maybe name five off maybe from some former players, media publicity. Maybe I know a couple, like maybe the Warriors and, you know, the Timberwolves, but I can't go rattling off the names of the Portland Trailblazers GM or the Utah Jazz GM. Like, you know, you're part of the team. You're not in the media. But again, hell, if you win a ring, you were there. Like, you accomplished your goal. You were part of that team. But the presence isn't really about you. It's the fact that you had a dude on your team who would get upset or make his own news to get upset and win games. And you should have been happy with that. So, for whatever reason, man, that dude ruin or cause friction in a situation of one of the best dynasties in sports of all time. See, I don't get it. It is mind blowing to hear you play that audio clip.
After they won. That's literally in the locker room after they won. You know what I mean? It's like, dog, this isn't in the middle of the summer in August when hey, you know, you've had a couple months off and, you know, nothing like that. It's literally the first things out of his mouth.
So that shows you how much it literally aided him. And even in a moment of happiness, he still had the, well, guys, you know, I'm not letting you slide on this one.
Yeah.
You know, go pat Jordan on the back. But just so you know, I put this, you know, son of a bitch here. Like it was me, you know, don't forget about good old Jerry Krause. You know, it would have been interesting, obviously, if he's obviously still been alive, you know, rest in peace you know, and obviously I'm guessing he probably wouldn't have had a whole lot of live camera shots if this is a Jordan-based documentary, as you point out. But he would have had some time to talk or would have had a comment or two on or three or four on social media to express his thoughts. Now, clearly, you're giving the guy a bad rap because he obviously wasn't the most friendly and he's no longer alive to defend himself. But for whatever reason, as you said, Chris, he just couldn't quite enjoy it as much as a sport general manager should. And, you know, as we were just talking about it before the show, I think to kind of get into one of my parts of enjoying it is just, man, the way Jordan was just mentally built. Again, it goes back to there's very few alphas, you know, as we talked about last show.
Serial killer?
There was a Jordan. There was Tiger, and there's your guy Mayweather, and you know, maybe even go Ronaldo for soccer. I mean, it's a less than 10 people who dominate a sport just due to the fact that they're obviously incredible athletes who are gifted with how they're born and have a mental degree of skill and physique and just adversity that most people don't have. And for Jordan, the dude, he just always was on his game. I mean, there was never a moment or night to take off. And that's why I kind of like that quote he said in episode 7 of, you know, I got to paraphrase it, but basically he said that, you know, winning comes at a cost. I think that might have been it. But, you know, it's like, dude, I had to be an asshole to guide my team. And it pissed some people off along the way. But as you watch the episode, almost every teammate who said, dude, Jordan got on my ass, like, always like, and you know what? That's why we won. Or I'm happy Jordan pushed me because no one else was ever that intense in practice and Jordan made me a better player. Or
this is what he said. This is his quote. You may call that being a tyrant, but you never won anything.
Yeah, I mean,
that sums him up in so many ways. Yeah, it's like, call me a dick, but you never won anything. It's like, so nobody's won anything on the planet Earth except you? Is that what you're saying? It's awesome.
It's an alpha ass quote, but I mean, from his perspective, dude, that was the leader he was. And, you know, he even had the fight with Kerr. You know, Kerr was picking at him one day, threw some punches, and from that point on, Kerr, like, said they got along because Jordan respected, he pushed back. So this, and I'll save the Peyton comment for you because I know you talked about that, but this, the last two shows really showed about how again and again, the dude was a mental just animal. And any little news clipping or any comments or any comment he can make for himself to piss him off and motivate you.
He make it up.
So
he literally made up quotes.
To
the guys wouldn't even say it. It'd be a no-namer. and he'd find a way. What was that guy's name? LeBradford. Random dude LeBradford Smith went off on him, and he didn't even talk shit to MJ, but he said, the guy said, good game. Like, good game's talking shit anyway. Like,
yeah.
Come on, dude.
Oh, I know.
He's saying, like, it's a good game, man, good man. And he didn't even say that, and he found a way to get him back.
The Bradford dropped 37 points on him, and then they played the same team in Washington, D.C. the next night, and Jordan's like, well, I'm going to score what he scored in the first half, and he dropped 36 in the first half, so he missed it by a point. It is fascinating because – I think nowadays, you know, there are athletes built like him, but, you know,
they're not allowed to be like that. That's what pisses me off.
I know.
They're not allowed. They're labeled as thugs and all this other shit. And that's what kind of makes me mad that Jordan got away with it. And even today, they're saying, that's just how he is. Well, okay, let's let these other guys do that then.
I would love for... And I'm sure they do it to some extent. Obviously, I'm sure there's times where LeBron has came to the locker room and said, dude, y'all need to get your shit together because you're about to cost me an effing ring. Or I'm sure he has that side to him.
They do it. I'm just saying they got to allow these players to do it without judging them so much. That's what disappoints me.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah. You know, and we'll get to the – I keep tying into what we're getting to. But we'll get to the Warriors and the Bulls.
Let's get some organized. Right, get some organized. Okay, let's get organized. So
it's a great documentary. So for the seventh episode, it hits on how mentally tough it is. And the other key point is it talks about him playing baseball, which, you know, for whatever reason you think he did it, whether he needed a mental break from basketball, he maybe was in some trouble with gambling, you know, who knows about that. He did have a friend say, dude, you're saying that the commissioner was going to kick him out when he was the most important person in the whole sport to the country with the most important team? He's like, I don't know. So that's obviously an interesting perspective. But Jordan did go into double-A baseball. And, hell, I didn't know Terry Francona was the damn coach, the Red Sox freaking World Series manager. And he's like, shit, Jordan would have been the majors in a couple of years.
And so, just to fill up, this was after the three-peat. And that summer, his father had passed. And so it was already in his head that he was going to do this, the baseball thing, not just retire, but actually play baseball, because he had told that reporter a year before this.
True.
But he wanted to go for the three-peat to be able to do something Magic and Larry didn't do.
And then you have a guy who had not played baseball since he was a high school senior. 14 years. And he couldn't – so he starts off with a 13-game hitting streak, then realizes, oh, shit, in baseball they have curveballs. Got so pissed off because, in fairness, obviously Sports Illustrated blamed him and said basically, you know, he's a joke of a baseball player. So then takes batting practice for like 4 or 5 hours a day and then starts learning how to hit that. And then if it wasn't for the lockdown, Chris, maybe Jordan would have kept playing. Who knows? The lockdown obviously did the Bulls a favor. But this dude goes into one of the toughest sports in the world of hitting a round ball with a round bat and was hitting above 200. For a sport he hadn't played in 14 damn years. Dude, talk about a freaking athlete.
Yeah, so basically he had 50 runs batted in that year as well. He went right to double A because they said the rookie and the single A stuff that they didn't have enough room for the media to be in there, which that could have stunted his growth as well. Now, the gambling conspiracy thing, I mentioned this last week, I believe. Andre Agassi and the USTA, and I bring him up just because he was a star at that time. Obviously, the NBA and USTA aren't on the same level, but just to bring it up, they actually hid the test. He failed a cocaine test. I think he failed a coke and a HGH. Actually, I don't think it was HGH. I think it was steroids, too, but it was coke as well. And they hid it. They hid the test. The only time we found out about it is when Agassi admitted it in a book years later. So... could it have happened? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It is kind of weird to be that competitive, that over-the-top competitive in your prime, and then be like, well, I don't have anything more to accomplish. It's like, dude, you're making up shit to accomplish shit in a game. Like, what do you mean you could be doing this forever? Like, that's a little weird. Now, on the flip side of that, he's so competitive that he's actually trying to be a baseball player – And we've seen that with Deion and Bo Jackson playing both sports at the same time. Bo Jackson, I believe, was a better baseball player. I know that's sacrilegious to say, but I think he was than a running back. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy to take that time off, to go back and do it. And when they say he blamed, they didn't blame him, but you got to admit it was kind of a joke thing, though. It's kind of, they had him missing that ball by like a foot and a half or something like that, because it was the breaking ball that is a lot of people that turned pro. It was kind of a joke too. He wasn't necessarily right away at a double A. I'd say that. I think that is
true.
Kind of
bullshit. Oh yeah.
Because those people have spent their whole life doing this, and he just gets to jump them. Now the cool thing they didn't talk about that as well was, that he actually bought them a luxury bus, the team that he was with, and they were super happy at that. It was kind of cool to see him more of a laid back, not more humble version of him. So that was kind of fun as they kind of went through that whole thing. And it was shocking. It was a shocking thing. I remember, you know, still in my teenage years, like, what the hell are you going to go do? I don't understand what's going on. So you can see how people did pick up on that conspiracy. I mean, it would be much bigger conspiracy now because you have Twitter and everything like that. But I can see that just because, dude, you're in your prime and you're one of the most competitive dudes on earth ever. So why would you stop? So I can understand some of that. But yeah, that is crazy that he was able to hit 202. And then they kind of flash back, to April 98, right as the playoffs are starting. Will Perdue finally said a bunch of stuff like, yeah, he was an asshole, he was a jerk, but you know, it was something that I found out why he was doing it. And they talked about how they didn't really go in as much when they flashed back to when MJ wasn't there to his team. They won 55 games without him in that 93-94 season. Pippen, Grant, and BJ Armstrong. I forgot BJ Armstrong had gone to the All-Star game. I knew they were going to have to focus on Pippen on this because, you know, he pulled out of that game, but he led, I believe, in five different categories. He was third, I think, in the MVP voting. I mean, this dude, it was crazy. Now let's get to the detail of, because it was Kukoc's rookie year. He had done well that year. He had also, like they said, you know, he couldn't play defense much at that time. Never was a great defender, but got better as time went on. Because, you know, the Europeans, they come here and they can shoot, but a lot of them can't defend. That's kind of the stereotype, which we see a fair amount of. It's no big deal. But the one thing, I don't think that they highlighted enough of Pippen that year. But for him not to go in that game, there's some weird stuff going on your phone over there. I don't know what that was.
Sorry about that.
Reverbing and stuff. Bill Cartwright was all pissed off at him for getting, you know, pulling out of the game. It was a shocker that he pulled out of the game. One detail that I didn't realize, though, I knew the shot wasn't going to him, but I didn't realize they had Pippen taking the ball out, throwing the ball in. And that's what I love about this documentary. I mean, the music, the soundtrack was on point again. Like, I love this documentary in so many ways. But the details we're getting, I didn't realize that they were going to have him put the ball in. And that is fucked up. Because, now, I don't agree with not going in the game. It's not what I'm saying. But, damn, dude, he's one of the best guys in the league. You could at least have him the ball or being out there, you know, as a decoy. Like, that was a little strange to me. Not strange enough not to get in the game. But that kind of was like, wow. Damn. And that's kind of right around the time NJ was crying, talking about being a tyrant and all that quote that we just talked about. Now, were you in the mode yet of basketball to remember him not going in that game? Do you remember that at all?
Again, my mid-90s years was Heat, Knicks, and Pacers. So I was watching NBA, but I was more so followed on those other teams just because it was obviously a lot more hard to watch all the teams. But no, I didn't recall that moment. But it's definitely crazy to have seen that. That was something that was actually brand new to me. And to compare it to nowadays, LeBron's even said, like, dude, like, Blatt would call plays. Like, that is something that does happen nowadays where the NBA is like, you're calling this up in the home. Like, dude's like, F that. No, I want the ball. And the coach normally says, okay, you're right. Now, to give Phil Jackson credit, Phil didn't budge. Phil said, oh, you're out? Okay, hey, you come in. Like, okay, shit. Phil wasn't obviously a soft-spoken man in the documentary, but he's like, dude, okay, you're out, good. And then, of course, to cap it off, Kukoc hits the shot and they win. And then they have this, you know, Bill Cartwright breaks down and cries in the locker room. You had like four different Bulls teammates saying in the documentary, like, dude, he started busting up. And, you know, Pippen felt bad. And, you know, like, obviously, something we got to move on from. But like you said, that's kind of the fun stuff to really engage about this, because that's a story that at least the details about Cartwright talking and you know, why Phil, like that's the fun stuff, Chris, that you and I enjoy, just because that's a cool sports story that we probably wouldn't have known all the details of if not for this documentary.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll say is, well, Phil got it right. Well, actually, what Pippen was doing on the play, the guy that threw the ball in threw it just fine. So Pippen still could have said, hey, Pip, I'll just have you on the wing or something, you know. He could have still had him on the game and talked him into it like a decoy. It may have been the slap in the face, like, not only am I not getting the last shot, but I'm not even on the fucking court. And that is a good point. You know, the guy threw it into Kukoc, so you already got that play. You didn't need Pippen to do that. We proved that. So that was kind of a funny look at it, but you're right. You're totally right on that. And just to kind of swing through some of this, you know, the B.J. Armstrong went off on him, and he got all pissed and went back at him. You know, he was hitting clutch baskets, had a clutch game and a clutch, backed it right on Jordan, won that game 78-76. That was pretty funny. We mentioned that LeBradford-Smith little flashback. The MLB strike that I was so pissed about back then, to have a season and then not to have the fucking, you know, it's unbelievable they didn't have that. That really hurt me as a baseball fan, and it actually put me down a notch on baseball after that, because I was still young enough that pissed me off to that point. And I was like, you're not going to have a regular season and then not have the playoffs, are you? And yeah, they did. But that helped MJ in February time. He was like, oh, I'm just gonna play a little bit. Him and BJ, this is when BJ was on the team still, came back, and you know, and all of a sudden he starts practicing. And I remember seeing the clips of him practicing going, oh shit. And then the whole I'm back, wearing the 4-5, his original favorite number. And it, you know, having a couple of games, I think on his fifth game, he went for 56 or 55 points at MSG wearing the 4-5. And that's just something that I will never forget that, dude. And also that game winner at Atlanta, I think the game or two before, that was another thing that he was like, that really, you know, that gave him a lot of energy. He also, in that game at MSG, that 55-point game wearing the 4-5, he passed to Wennington for that dunk. I remember that. He did that for Luke Longley not that long after. And then they got into the Orlando versus Bulls, the Orlando Magic and Bulls. And you look at that team with young Shaq, young Penny Hardaway, and you had Nick Anderson. I mean, they had a freaking squad, dude, and it was on the up and up. And for him to come back in that series, and just the way the series ended up, where you had Nick Anderson, you know, they beat him. Horace Grant had gone because, you know who, Jerry Krause hadn't re-signed Grant, Horace Grant at all. So he just let him go. I think he traded him. I wasn't sure. But he went to Orlando, and that was – and so they had Grant, Nick Anderson, Penny, and that shooter with Shaq. I can't remember the shooter for some reason. But, I mean, he was misfiring passes to Pippen. He was throwing up air balls. You know, he got stolen on and by Nick Anderson at the end of that game. I think that was game one. And, you know, they ended up, you know, beating them. 4-2 in that series. And that was one of those where you're like, wow, it had been a long time since Detroit seeing Jordan get the ball stolen and the Bulls lose. And I remember where I was at that time. But what's your thoughts on that in general? And also, the Space Jam was that summer, you know, before that. And they're talking about how he trained during that, but also the crazy pickup games, which I really wish they had filmed a lot of those games like they did with the Olympic practices, because I'd probably buy them. That was pretty crazy, too, to have all those pickup games. But what were you thinking just in general? And do you remember that time where Jordan came back and all of a sudden fucking Nick Anderson stealing the ball from him? And you're like, what is going on?
I mean, I remember Shaq and Penny, more so Penny, just because of little Penny and Tyra Banks commercials. I thought was some,
that Chris was some
legendary shit. Yeah, those I need to rewatch those. Those were some badass commercials. If you've never seen little Penny commercials, go on YouTube and enjoy just a couple minutes of laughter, because that was pretty creative stuff. But for that video, you know, I was just thinking about gambling. Like, you know, you see Jordan come back that year, and you see them lose to Magic, who obviously, as you said, were a very talented team. But then next year, to see them play again,
only to get schooled by Akeem the Dream and get swept because Nick Anderson missed a bunch of clutch free throws at the end of game one, and they never got over it. And Shaq said he was a better player after getting taken to school by Elijah Wan. They got swept too. Go ahead.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, obviously that Magic team was not the best, but they weren't a joke. So to see that happen and then realize, oh shit, they're playing each other again, like that would have been like, I would have bet my whole life savings on the fact that, oh, so you're telling me Jordan came back last year and lost to a team and they're playing him again? Like, that's not even gonna be matchup.
Well, especially
that
was off 72 win year too going into it. The whole season was an avenge, you know, I mean, the whole season was built off that. And that's when they added Rodman as well in that 96 squad. And some people say it's the 92 squad, but most people say the 96 squad is the best squad. And yeah, all that built into one from that offseason and during that season, trying to get back to payback on Magic or on the Magic.
I mean, you got arguably the best rebounder of all time, one of the best five tool players of all time, and one probably the best scorer of all time. So yeah. So, and they're pissed off that you beat them last year. Yeah, you're screwed. And as Nick Anderson said, dude, we didn't have a chance. He said that wasn't even a series. And I did like how they showed that, because normally when they've shown game clips of series in this show, it's normally been like a 5 to 10 minute break. That was a game, like one play per game clip of like, boom, Jordan dunk, there's a score. Boom, Pippen three, there's a score. And 10 seconds later, you're like, oh yeah, by the way, they swept their ass. Okay, on to Seattle. So yeah, that probably wasn't that great of basketball. So it would have been interesting, actually. I'll look this up for next time to see how they made point spreads for Jordan. Yeah, I'll do a little bit of homework for us, because we've always been fascinated about how Vegas makes point spreads for Brady and the Patriots. I'm going to do a little bit of gambling research, because I kind of want to know, how did Vegas handle handicapping a dude where as long as he brought his B-minus game, they were going to win? You know, nowadays, like, you know, I would say Curry, like the Warriors in their heyday, or LeBron, you know, a 12 to 13 point favorite is normally a respectable home favorite when you're at home and you're playing kind of a lower end team. But for Jordan, like, I'm just going to look that up, because to handicap someone like him, that's like, dude, the Bulls probably aren't going to lose. So if you're in Vegas, you're like, I'll take the Bulls money line for $1,000. And even if you went back 400, like, okay, you just made $400 because this dude wasn't going to lose. So yeah, it was fascinating. Just go ahead.
Well, and they said, it's funny that you brought that up, because remember they said it was like the biggest mismatch at that time, as of right there, for the finals with Seattle. That was the biggest mismatch on paper as far as odds. I don't know if it was just the whole series or game one, but they did say that in that series. But that year they finished 87-13, .87, so 87 win percentage. And that was just enough to beat 83-16 from Golden State, who's second best of all time. And that's like the regular season, which we all know Golden State got to 73, but we know what happened. So, yeah, 83-16 was awesome. But 87-13, that's the best overall record postseason included. And just going into that, let's talk about that. George Karl pissed off Michael because they have ties to North Carolina.
Everyone pisses off Michael.
Right. I always pissing off. All he did is not fucking go shoot the shit with the guy he's about to go play against. You know, oh, my God. That's like, I can't believe that happened. Like, we've never heard of that before. Joe, what, he needs to play golf with you? And you got to take his money and then you'll be happy? Or no, I don't understand that. But remember, even Danny Ainge took his money and then he got pissed off back in the 80s. But George Karl walked by him, I guess, and didn't say what's up to him. And he's like, all right, dude, fuck that. And he's pissed off. And another thing we forgot to mention, that it just the times have changed. You know, we talk about people drinking in the locker room and all that. But to see MJ talking like a killer, like a mobster, with a bat in his hand and a cigar in the other, and a cigar in the mouth talking about people talking trash, that was hilarious. But, yeah, for whatever reason, he didn't like George Karl talking shit. He would have made up anyway. He would have made something anyway. But
sure.
They went off on him, up 3-0. And for some reason, I had messed that up. I thought they had won the first game and then the second to last game. But that was not right. They were up 3-0. Series over. It's in the bank. And Gary Payton talked George Karl into letting him guard him. He's like, what's the point, dude? It's 3-0 anyway. Forget what you're saying, kind of what you were just saying about, you know, players saying, forget this play, let's run this. And he's like, no, let me guard him. I got him. No, we're not going to listen to you anymore. We're listening to mine. And sure enough, MJ went 6-19. And then in 2 games later, when they did clinch it, he had another, like, game. And, of course, they won the championship on Father's Day, which I'll never forget as well, watching them as a fan. You know, knowing how, you know, it really brought me back to the first time that he won the championship in the season 7, when he was hugging that thing and crying and really just showing all this emotion you never see out of me. You really just saw that smile and that fierce, ferocious savage on the court. That's usually what you saw out of Mike, in the tongue, I guess you could say, pause, you know. But they haven't really talked about the tongue and how he got it. I think everybody knew it because his dad used to work in the garage, and when he'd be doing stuff, he'd have his tongue out. And that's where MJ got the tongue out thing. Well, when it's time to focus, the most focus I am, because he'd be doing some workshop stuff, drilling stuff, and doing stuff in front of Mike, and Mike would just watch and learn or whatever. And so that's where the whole tongue thing is. But Peyton's like, nah, screw this, I'm going to guard him. And he did a damn good job. I mean, back-to-back games, you know, he definitely tightened up on him. And but then Michael saw the clip, you know, and they gave the clip, and Peyton's like, oh, man, who knows what would have happened? I would have wore his ass down if they put me on game 1 and all that. And so obviously, and actually this is from Ahmad Rashad, MJ told me that Gary Payton asked for his shoes after game 1, and that's when he knew he had them. That's what he said about that Gary Payton asked him. And that Sonics team, if you look at, I mean, look at the mid-90s Sonics, okay? It had Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, and Payton. Those were the key guys. There was other good guys too, no doubt about it. But starting in 93-94, 63-19, 57-25, 95-96, the year that we're talking about, 64-18 and 38-3 at home, and then 57-25 and 61-21. That was the year that actually, I think, was it 97? The year that the Timberwolves had gotten to the playoffs with Marbury, KG, and Gugliotta, and Sam Mitchell, and Terry Porter, and stuff like that. And that's the year that we won one of the early games, and Gary Payton was Marbury was talking shit to Gary Payton, walking him all the way down the court. It was amazing. But back to that, though, they gave it to Matt, you know, so obviously Gary's talking a little bit of extra shit like I would have worn him down, which, you know, to be honest, Maybe that's true. And he did do a damn good job in 2 out of those 3 games. But it also is the case in point where he could have worn down from having to chase Jordan around from game one, too. So we can't forget about that. But, of course, the what he said was, oh, the glove? Nah, it was something else. So it, even when a guy who's a Hall of Fame player, who's one of the best defensive guards on point guards to play the game, and yet MJ still couldn't give him any credit.
Yeah, and, you know, I keep going back and forth. It's, again, like, I think the only reason we've seen a different side of Tiger is because of all the incidents he's been through. That, again, those guys, they just never really ever want to give a single inch. As you said before the show, if you give Peyton credit for being a great defender, that almost kind of, you know, secretly pats you on the back yourself, because you were able to still win a series where a great, great all-time defender was guarding you, you know. But some people just never want to give an inch, which is a little bit funny, because throughout the whole show, one of the few compliments he's ever given was to Isaiah Thomas, saying he's the second best guard of all time. And for all we know, Jordan can't stand him. So why not give a little bit of a, hey, you know, Peyton was a good defender to a guy, you know, but then he does get. So, I mean, he must have truly respected Isaiah from how these comments have been said, for him to laugh at Peyton, but then also give Isaiah the comment, say, dude, I didn't want his ass on our team and for the dream team, but he was a hell of a guard. So, yeah, that is interesting, just how he's wired mentally. But the one, I guess, takeaway, because as
I do, you know, I do said, have a little clip on this and some stats, but keep
sure,
going.
Sure, go ahead.
No, I'll finish it off with that.
Okay. I'll just say that it is fascinating because, you know, I was not quite young enough to comprehend basketball like I do now, but it is insane to me to, because I know the names of Drexler, Peyton, you know, Shaq, Barkley, all the Bird, man, and all these guys, almost every damn player, they've said, dude, Jordan won the game that night. Like, nope, couldn't stop him. I mean, this show has literally had probably 10 Hall of Famers on there, and everyone's like, yeah, we didn't have an answer for him. And I don't think you could, I mean, I guess you could do it for at moments for LeBron and Kobe, but now with longevity, or also now without saying, hey, you know, I had my nights too. It's just fascinating. And again, as you said, yeah. Chris, he didn't win every single playoff game, but holy cow, you're interviewing like a lot of the top 50 players of all time. They're like, yeah, we didn't stop him. And my teammate pissed them off, so that pissed them off even more. That made him even more mad at us.
Yeah, the play that night, what changes, we gave the ball to Michael Jordan, and everybody got the fuck out of the way. I loved when they said that. You know, it's like, that was our play. That was our big adjustment. You know, like, our adjustment.
That was a great
quote. Collins said that. Doug Collins said that.
Yep.
That's freaking hilarious. Here's the deal, though. And by the way, we're going to skip the NCAA stuff. This is going too far. We'll go heavy NCAA because there's more to go with these stories and rules and all that. But we'll get to that next week. Forget that. Now here's the story, though. Now, I don't expect MJ to give really an inch too much. I understand that. That's cool. He said, though, and I understand Gary saying, well, if they would have put me game one, I would have worn him down. I understand that. That's the player. But somewhere in here, we have to, you know, they didn't mention Joe Dumars. And everybody knows Joe Dumars could actually be one of those guys that stood up to Jordan in there. And I'm not saying got in his face or nothing like that. I'm sure he did. It was the Pistons series. Everybody was getting each other's face. But he could not only play with them and make it tough, but he could score too, Dumars. So I thought that was kind of disrespectful not to bring up Joe Dumars at all, which was, he played some of the best basketball against Jordan throughout his career. I'm not saying you got to make an episode about him or even more than a little mention, but I just thought that was kind of weird. They did Clyde kind of dirty because he averaged like 25 points in that series, although, you know, of course, dude went off on him, but nobody in America – besides a Portland fan, and maybe not even that, was trying to level them two up as the same player. I mean, he's the best-known guy from Portland, and they're in the, you know, they're in the NBA Finals. You don't think that they're going to talk up these two players? But I understand MJ taking that personal. That's cool. I get it. But this Gary Payton thing, it's like, dog, can't you just give something? But not even the player. the documentary. You got to follow it up a little bit. And that was my problem. It's like, dude, you're not even to and I know how they did it, because they said, well, he said I was going through some things. And that's fair. And I hate to bring it up, because he was sad at the time, really sad. And maybe that he did lose some focus in that. But remember, they won the championship on Father's Day. So if there's ever a not focused – I don't like how they went 3-0, and then all of a sudden he was unfocused thinking about his dad. Well, it's like, so you were okay, but then you weren't. And it's just like, can't you just – I just thought they should have done something there. I mean, you look at it. He shot 6-19 and had 5 turnovers in game four, which, you know, that's not really Jordan, right, obviously. And then in the closeout game, he actually was 5-19. Okay? So that's pretty fucking good. You know what I mean? I think that's pretty good against Jordan to do that. But there's stats that bake it. It's like nobody's taking away your rings, Mike. But, you know, he did actually check you, dude, for those 2 out of 3 games. You guys won it. You had the better team as well. And that's what I'm saying about when we talk about the NBA Finals and the two games that – there was two games that we've pointed out numerous times on the NBA podcast about LeBron and how he didn't deliver. He's admitted it too, against Dallas. But these are two games he didn't deliver. There was the beginning of the series with the Knicks he didn't deliver. There was some things that he didn't deliver before he got over the hump. So it's kind of like, well, we can't just – Mike, you're the best. We get it. But I don't know. Here's some stats, though, which are pretty freaking telling.
Reality. Michael Jordan, for what he said about Gary Payton. Mike, nobody's taking away any of your rings. Gary Payton put the clamps on you, Mike. We saw the games. Oh. Show the numbers. Can we show what Jordan did pre and post Payton guarding him? First 3 games, when the brilliant George Karl's like, no, Gary Payton, best point guard defender ever, don't guard Mike. Mike kills you. Next 3 games, look at those points and percentages. Michael Jordan, in the 6 title run years, played 116 playoff games. His 115th and 114th best, or in other words, second and third worst shooting performances, were games 4 and 6 against Gary Payton.
And that's what I'm saying, dude. Like, there's enough stats there that tell you something. Now, is Gary Payton better than you? Fuck no. Like I said, he could have gotten worn down, you know, guarding you game one. But, dude, first 3 games, he averaged 31 points, 5 assists, shot. He actually, I think it was game 2 where he went off from 3. Maybe it was game 1. He hit, like, a bunch of them. But he was 50% from 3 and shot 46% overall. And the 3 games guarded by the glove, down to 24 points, so that's 7 points less, even less assists. And he shot 37% from the field and 11% from three-point land. So, I mean, that's where I'm like, it's not Mike. Okay, if you don't want to give him credit, Mike, cool. That's fine. I get that. And just like, you know, Gary saying all that other shit, yeah, that's probably stupid too. But the documentary, this is where ESPN has to come in and be like, hey, dude, that was pretty fucking good. So, you know, maybe it's me just mad. I thought they did Isaiah not totally right all the way in that. I think they did it pretty good, but that's part of it. You know, that is part of it. Also, they called it the best comeback of all time out of any sports. I'm not sure about that, because Ted Williams, and this kind of cracks me up, but Ted Williams, talk about a comeback. He fought World War II for 3 years during his age 24-26, came back and won the MVP in his first season. Not to mention, and Peter Vesey brought this to light on Twitter, then turned around 2 years, or then went 2 years more to Korea and came back and hit 400 or better in a couple seasons. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think there's some pretty damn good comebacks. I'm not sure that's the best, because he didn't come back from any kind of injury or anything like that. He went out when he was a pro. But that's part of all this stuff. I just think that ESPN could have at least said, hey, Gary did a pretty good job on you. You know what I mean? Any last words, sir, before we move on, sir?
No. I you wrapped that up really well, and I hope that we get a ton of Jazz like game footage, because I kind of want that to. We've hit all the personal notes, yeah. And all the stories. I just want a bunch of like good basketball like timeouts. Here's what Phil was thinking, because that was a hell of a series they had against the Jazz that we'll see next week.
You know, what's funny is before we even get there though, the Pacers series, that, even though they were 2-0.
Yeah, and they did the Reggie Miller preview too, sure.
Yeah, and even though they were up 2-0, they came back storming. And, dude, last night, I thought they were going to do it. I thought they were going to – you know how they had like 4 minutes left, and they started bringing up that series? I'm like, you're not going to spend 4 minutes on this fucking series, are you? You mean to tell me you just did Gary like that? And now you're going to spend a couple of minutes on the fucking – their hardest series? What, are their only game sevens? You know, like, that had me flipping out for a second. But they set it up, so I was like, thank God. And I want to see how they address the push-off. That's what I want to see. They better at least address it. Because we all know one of his most iconic shots – there's a couple of them. The Craig Elo double, triple clutch. The spread in the Lakers where he thought A.C. Green was going to come and he didn't, so he switched hands, but he didn't need to, but he did because A.C. Green. That, you know, the just Jordan Duncan, obviously, the free throw line. But obviously the shot that ended that series against Utah, that's one of his best moments, obviously, that we all remember. But we all do remember, some of us more than others, that he clearly pushed off in the fucking shot. And they better address that. If they don't, there's going to be a long rant after this one, I'll tell you that. And, hey, I get it. I'm not saying take the shot back, but let's just be honest. That's all I'm saying. Let's be honest, people. Fouls happen every fucking play, right? I'm not bitter. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that, but we all know he fucking pushed off on Russell, obviously. And Russell had actually started catching up to that fadeaway. So I'm really pumped up. But I, like you said, the Pacers and then this series and then, you know, like you said, that the Jazz series, especially the game 6-1 and just all that. I mean, they got plenty of time for two more episodes left, so they should figure it out. All right. We're not going to go NCAA. Sorry about that. We're not going to have you listen too much more. We're already past an hour. So we really appreciate you guys listening during this time. And hopefully, you know, as the weeks go by, that we're going to get some basketball back. All right, we'll see you next week. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the Sunday night back-to-back final episodes of what has been a great documentary, The Last Dance. Peace.